from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the middle of the summer. It's good vibes all around, except where it's too hot, which I guess is everywhere. Except here at the home of the homeless, which is why the homeless are here. They may be homeless, but they're not dumb. Former State Department, this is a follow-up with as much popping on the microphone as humanly possible. This is a follow-up to last week when we learned that after a series of meetings, the Bush administration was changing the phrase, the slogan, the rallying cry, global war on terror, to something like the, don't even remember what it was now, struggle against violent extremism, that's what it was. And we even broadcast one of those meetings for your listening pleasure. Possibly because of any of the foregoing, including the hot weather, this now appears this week. Former State Department counterterrorism official Larry C. Johnson reported on his blog Tuesday that the global war on terrorism, quote, may still be alive, unquote. The GWOT, Global War on Terrorism, is catchy, a senior administration official said a couple of months ago when the series of meetings started to get rid of it. Quote, but there may be a better way to describe it, in fact. Unquote. But at a White House meeting of senior officials on Monday, this former counterterrorism official wrote in his blog, President Bush reportedly said he was not in favor of the new term. In fact, he said, no one checked with me. That's a quote, ladies and gentlemen. That may be the, if there's ever a flag for this administration, you know, like the flag that said, don't tread on me early in the revolutionary days of this country. No one checked with me might be on the standard of this administration. Quote, that comment brought an uncomfortable silence to the assembled group of poobahs. This is from Larry Johnson's blog. The president insisted it was still a war as far as he's concerned. That's why he dresses up in uniforms every now and then, just to make that point. And Rumsfeld was back to using global war on terror in his prepared remarks to a Dallas business group Tuesday. A spokesman at the White House told the Washington Post, quote, we do not discuss internal meetings at the White House. So we don't know what it is now, ladies and gentlemen, but we do know they didn't check with him. You can choose to be reassured or not, as the case may be. And news from the digital wonderland, can this be our future? Can our future be in Belgium first? This is what scares the rest of the Europeans, the thought that their future may be in Belgium. Thousands of Belgian apartment dwellers will not be able to switch from analog to digital television. Some 25 to 45,000 subscribers to Belgian cable TV provider Telenet, who reside in apartments built in the 60s and 70s, will not be able to switch to digital services next month. The apartment complex's internal cabling is currently inadequate for digital. For years, the company has refused to upgrade the cabling, saying the work was too expensive. Many of the residents of the apartments are poor or elderly. Well, they don't watch much TV. It's okay. Telenet will launch its digital services next month. The company is currently exploring cheaper ways of providing the service. And when they succeed with that, they can explore cheaper ways of protecting the space shuttle. Hello, welcome to the show.
Marched away and left this town as empty as can be. And I am like the driftwood in a deadly calm at sea. I can't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. For there is no secret lover that the draft board didn't discover. They're either too young or too old. They're either too gray or too grassy green. The pickings are poor and the crop is lean.
What's good is in the army, what's left will never harm me. They're either too old or too young. So darling, you'll never get stung. Tomorrow I'll go hiking with that Eagle Scout unless I get a call from Grandpa for a snappy game of chess. I'm finding it easy to stay good as gold. They're either too young or too old. They're either too warm or too cold. They're either too fast or too fast asleep. So darling, believe me, I'm yours to keep. There isn't any gravy, the gravy's in the Navy. They're either too fresh or too stale. There is no available mail. I must confess to one romance, I'm sure you will allow. He tries to serenade me, but his voice is changing now. I'm finding it easy to keep things controlled. They're either too young or too old. I'll never, never fail ya while you are in Australia or out in the Aleutians or off among the Russians and flying over Egypt. Your heart will never be gypped. And when you get to India, I'll still be what I've been to ya. I've looked the field over, and lo and behold, I'm either their first breath of spring, or else I'm their last little fling. I either get a fossil or an adolescent pup. I either have to hold him off, or have to hold him up. The battle is on, but the fortress will hold. They're either too young or too old.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, although I was in San Francisco this week, and I know why I get letters from people in San Francisco, email from people in San Francisco saying, how dare you call Santa Monica the home of the homeless? Come up here and see, and I did, and they're right, but still, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, just inside the bubble, this report, the United States risks squandering billions of dollars if it does not adequately train Iraqis. Wave those billions goodbye. Train Iraqis to run power plants, water treatment facilities, and other projects built during the country's reconstruction. This is according to a report released this week by our government auditors. Good luck to them in their new occupation. The timing is just right. Just before we skedaddle, the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction. Did you know that there was that job? Did they talk to you about that at Career Day? Special Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction. He also renewed a caution issued 3 months ago that the United States could run out of money before finishing its work because the government doesn't have a handle on how much it's spending. Hey, we had an accountability moment. It was last November. U.S. agencies, quote, must determine whether sufficient funds exist to complete the projects begun in Iraq and whether these projects include a sustainability plan that will provide the Iraqis with the tools and knowledge necessary to operate and maintain their new infrastructure. A failure on either of these points risks leaving little to show for billions in U.S. infrastructure investment, unquote. And your point is? Congress authorized $18.4 billion for Iraq reconstruction in November of 2003. Of that total, about 35% has been spent. 1,000 projects completed, about 1,000 more underway. And the rest of that money? Yeah. Investigators are concerned that there may not be enough trained Iraqis to keep facilities running once Americans complete the initial work. For example, the Government Accountability Office reported last week that a power failure resulted after the United States overhauled a power plant and failed to teach Iraqis how to operate it. Are you loving this war yet? State Department spokeswoman Nancy Beck said the United States is focused on the problem. And as soon as they focus on the solution, things will work out just fine. Oh, no, and is going to devote more funds to training Iraqis in maintenance and operation. The Inspector General's office will conduct audits to determine how well that training is working. Stay tuned for that. Another area auditors plan to look at is the government's system for monitoring how much money it's spending in Iraq. You'd think, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? The Project and Contracting Office, which oversees reconstruction, has been unable to produce comprehensive data on that, in part because of a lack of coordination. There are a dozen or more offices from six U.S. agencies involved in the reconstruction process, and there is minimal, if any, integration among the various systems that these offices use to manage information, the audit report said. Pentagon controls about 70% of U.S. reconstruction funding. The Defense Department initially estimated that security would eat up $1.2 billion of the reconstruction funds, but recently pegged the number at $2 billion. The Inspector General's report said the costs are probably, quote, much higher than that. With security costs eating away at budgets, some programs have been scrapped altogether. Others have received less funding than they need. Auditors reviewing a water treatment facility that had its funding cut found that it would not increase the amount of available water and would not improve water quality enough to make it potable. They need water over there? Now they tell me. The report did note progress in some areas. It said the number of trained Iraqi security personnel is at an all-time high of 169,812. That's why security in Iraq is so very good right now. Hey, let's all go over. I'll meet you in the green zone. What do you say? And, ladies and gentlemen, on a related but totally unrelated subject, Afghanistan's upcoming parliamentary elections face a funding shortfall of $31 million because international donors have failed to deliver on pledges. That's from that damn UN. What are they meddling around in that for? The lack of funding threatens to undermine plans for the election scheduled for September 18th. Ah, it's a month away. What are they worried about? They're expected to cost about $149 million. Quote, if these funds do not become available very shortly, it will hurt essential preparatory work such as voter education and the establishment of thousands of polling stations and the hiring of over 140,000 polling staff, the UN Assistance Mission spokesman said in Kabul. Recent violence has also threatened to destabilize Afghanistan ahead of the elections. Officials warn that the violence could imperil more than 3 years of progress towards elections. They urge donor governments to reaffirm their commitment to the September elections. The spokesperson declined to identify the countries that have not paid. Asked why the UN didn't issue a warning earlier, the spokesman said discussions with donors were going on and possible funding difficulties had not been forgotten or overlooked. We don't anticipate a perfect election after so many years of conflict, said the spokesperson. That's just a sad reality. Meanwhile, militants in southern Afghanistan ambushed a UN convoy, blah, blah, blah. It's just money, ladies and gentlemen, just some funds that need to be transferred and their expenditure followed up. That's not a big deal. That's something the government knows how to do, doesn't it? That's well within the province of big government. If only people who liked big government were running it, I'm sure that could be done in a trice. But as to the failure to follow up on this accounting in Iraq and to make sure the Afghani elections are sufficiently funded, I think we can count on the President of the United States to point out at an appropriate time that they didn't check with him. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Seoul, South Korea. South Korea's spy agency apologized this week for illegally recording telephone conversations involving influential figures and admitted that wiretapping continued long after the former president, Kim Dae-jung, ordered an end to it in 1998. Quote, I ask for the forgiveness of the Korean people for past illegal wiretapping, National Intelligence Service Chief Kim Sung-kyu said, reading a statement to reporters. He also apologized for, quote, causing anxiety and disappointment to the Korean people, unquote, by leaking the information from the wiretaps. President Roh Moo-hyun ordered an investigation into wiretapping last month after a scandal broke over recording of an alleged conversation between a major newspaper publisher and an influential company executive. The two allegedly discussed, discussed channeling slush funds to candidates in that year's presidential election. The scandal was dubbed the X-Files by local media. Don't tell Rupert. They'll be in court again. Robert Novak apologized Friday for swearing on the air and walking off the set at CNN, but said it had nothing to do with the federal probe sparked by his revelation of Valerie Plame's name in a 2003 column. Quote, I apologize for my conduct. I'm sorry I did it, Novak said in an interview. CNN has pulled him off the air indefinitely. Novak said, I'll follow their guidance on when he returns. There have been reports that anchor Ed Henry, who was interviewing Novak and James Carville at the time the incident occurred, had a copy of Who's Who in America on his desk, bookmarked to what might have been the Joseph Wilson-Valerie Plame entry. Novak, in a column this week, intimated that you could find Valerie Plame's maiden name, which would help in her outing, in Who's Who, so he didn't need to have a source, and therefore, don't put him in jail. A retired United Methodist minister, conservative activist, and author of widely read books on pastoral counseling has admitted to sexual misconduct with a woman that took place over a number of years. Hey, it's a live woman, okay? Get off his back. The Reverend David Siemens. Yes, indeed. The Reverend David Siemens, 83, apologized this week to his former congregation in Wilmore, Kentucky for, quote, my breach of trust and moral failure, unquote. According to a statement released by the Kentucky Conference of the United Methodist Church, he agreed to refrain from all ministry for 1 year. Yeah, he won't be able to come back until he's 85, as part of a disciplinary process overseen by Kentucky Bishop James King and others who helped mediate. The woman who brought the complaint also was involved in the disciplinary process. I admit I have broken my covenantal relationships and have abused the trust of those I have harmed, he said. According to the statement, I deeply regret the pain and suffering I've caused to the victim, to my family, friends, and the church. Covenantal. Thank you. A representative of Nikkan Gendai, a tabloid newspaper with a readership of more than 1.6 million in Japan, has visited the Guam Visitors Bureau office in Tokyo and apologized for misinformation the newspaper printed last month. The Visitors Bureau announced this week. The article, entitled Popularity Falls Badly for Guam and Saipan, states that Guam lacks high-grade hotels and the local food tastes awful. And Japan domestic air tickets have come down to the level where it's possible to visit Okinawa for the same price with no language barrier. In a meeting, the newspaper's deputy general manager, Tsutomu Ito, said reporters responsible for the article never went to Guam. Wrote their article after interviewing four people, two travel writers, a travel sales agent, and a bridal agent. As a result of the apology, Guam will receive $25,000 worth of free publicity, which will be published in the tabloid later this month. A talk show host for the San Francisco Giants' longtime flagship radio station has apologized for racial remarks made about the Giants' Latino players. The station's executive said he would not be fired. On the air late Wednesday after the Giants lost 3-2 to the Colorado Rockies, Larry Kruger of KNBR started talking about the struggling club and its, quote, brain-dead Caribbean hitters hacking its slop nightly. Later, he said, you have a manager in Felipe Alou's, mine has turned to cream of wheat. Kruger apologized. His verbal bashing of the Giants players and manager was still available in an audio download from the station's website late this week, but the word Caribbean had been edited out. It was offensive, and we took it out, said the manager. There was no apology for the attack on the baseball manager. The cream of wheat box traditionally showed a black man named Rastus wearing a chef's hat serving a steaming bowl of the hot cereal to a group of white children. I think that cream of wheat thing was taken out of context, the station manager said. Dateline Ocean City, Maryland, police arrested a New Jersey police officer on an indecent exposure charge after people complained the man was standing naked in front of his hotel room window. Edison, New Jersey police officer David Salardino and a friend were arrested about 2:30 a.m. Wednesday. Several people had complained that two nude men, were visible through the window of their room at the Comfort Inn. The hotel's night manager told police that when he went outside of the building and looked up, he was clearly able to see full frontal nudity as the policeman stood fully exposed in front of the hotel room window. He was attempting to, quote, show off by flexing as he stood naked in front of the window in order to attract the attention of the people on the sidewalk in front of the hotel, according to a police report. When officers went to the room, Salardino identified himself as a police officer and denied the accusations. After police told him about several witnesses they talked to, he apologized and said he took full responsibility for what happened, but he never actually admitted exposing himself, according to the report. Full responsibility without actually admitting anything. That's the kind of apology I admire, ladies and gentlemen. It's brazen, but it's cool. Dateline Fort Bliss. I mean, if you have to be at a fort, wouldn't you rather be at Fort Bliss than Fort Misery? Sure you would. A military intelligence soldier was reduced in rank and will serve no prison time after pleading guilty this week to charges of mistreating a detainee in Afghanistan. The detainee later died. Reduced in rank for something that... Well, let's see. Sergeant Selena Salcedo tearfully apologized to the military judge before the judge issued his sentence, which also included a reduction in rank, a letter of reprimand, and forfeiture of $250 a month for 4 months. That's a grand. I just want to apologize to my mother for making her go through this and to you for being in your court, said Salcedo, 24, who pleaded guilty to dereliction of duty and assault. I'm a better soldier than that. Military prosecutors dropped two related charges as part of the plea agreement. That looks good overseas. When you, mistreat a detainee who later dies, pay $1,000. That's called an entertainment fee. Dateline South Bend, Indiana, the fourth member of East Chicago's infamous Sidewalk 6 was sentenced to U.S. District Court to 2.5 years in prison this week. Former East Chicago Park Superintendent Joe Valdez will serve 33 months for his role in the Concrete for Votes scam. Valdez told the court he was sorry for his actions. For the people of East Chicago that feel I did something wrong to them, I apologize, he said. Pleaded guilty last year to misapplying local government money, wire fraud, and perjury. He was a part of a scam where votes were bought through unauthorized sidewalk paving and tree trimming services throughout a neighborhood. And around the lake, a former engineer for Chicago's Transportation Department was sentenced to 1 year and 1 day in prison this week for pocketing bribes to help a friend get work in the city's scandal-plagued hired truck program. Jason Martin faced up to 2 years in prison, but he was given half that because of his cooperation with authorities. His cooperation contributed to the decision by a co-worker, John Quarters Boyle, to plead guilty. Boyle had influence in doling out hired truck work. Martin pleaded guilty to bribery for pocketing $13,000 from a lifelong friend for whom he obtained work in the hired truck program with Boyle's assistance. He did it for a friend, said his lawyer. That's the kind of guy Jason is. With half a dozen family members watching, Martin apologized in court to the citizens of Chicago for not doing the right thing. I made a terrible mistake, he said. I'm never going to forget it. It cost me a lot. He choked up with emotion as he apologized to his wife and family. Ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. It is, isn't it? A copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Old sunglasses and a wandering eye. He looks like he's...
this is Le Show, and we're cleaning up some loose ends in this early August period. There was a story that actually made the wires, made the news services in a limited way, which in itself tells you so much, ladies and gentlemen. Last week, about the conviction of O.J. Simpson in Florida on charges of pirating DirecTV satellite service. Judge ordered him to pay $25,000 in damages, plus attorney's fees and other costs. So I guess DirecTV will be in the queue right behind Fred Goldman. In a raid on Simpson's Miami home in 2001, federal agents seized illegal devices known as bootloaders that authorities said were used to steal television programming from DirecTV, owned by Rupert Murdoch. It's O.J. versus Rupert. How do you bet? How do you root? Simpson's attorney, Yael Galanter, said the judge basically denied our right to a jury trial. Galanter said Simpson was aware of the ruling. Asked whether he would pay the damages and other costs, the attorney said, "We're examining our legal options. We want our day in court. They may be examining other options as well."
Hold on a minute. Just a second. Just a second. Why is it whenever you have to take a... Hello?
Hey, Larry.
Yeah, who? Juice?
Hey, Larry, who else calls you when you're taking a crap?
What, you got some x-ray vision or something? What?
No, no, you got some voice-activated answering deal or something. You know, Kels, I heard
Juice, I'm busier than a one-armed tumbler at Grossinger's. What?
You know, Larry, I've always been in your corner.
No, I know that, of course.
You know, when people put in a knock on you over at ABC when I was there, you know, I always stood up for you.
Well, I appreciate that, O.J. And I think during your trial or trials, I think you remember I always bent over backwards to treat everything straight up.
Of course, I clocked that, Larry. Yeah. But you know, over the years when people said, "Hey, Larry's show has gotten stale or trivial or it's not fit for idiots or whatever," they said, you know how people are, you know, I've stood up for the show.
Well, you said it is fit for idiots, and then it was Jackie Vernon's line, "Before your time, Juice."
Great. Always a learning experience when I talk to you, Larry. But look, you know, I don't call you unless I need something.
No, I appreciate that, Juice. I got enough schmoozes as it is.
And I know that. Yeah. But, Larry, I've just been through, I guess you might call the trial of the next century.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen a railroad job like this since they shut down those great tax shelters back in the 80s.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. I was a sheep farmer for a couple of years. Never met a sheep.
Right. So you know about my trial down here.
I'm not sure, Juice. It wasn't, you didn't kill another girl,
no.
or even a girl for the first.
Larry, I didn't kill anybody down here. They busted me for, it's embarrassing just to say it. If they take you in for murder one, at least that's a man's crime. You know what I'm saying?
I'm
not defending it, but, you know, at least you could hold your head high. But this, Larry, this was pirating DirecTV signals, man. You know, I mean, that's almost as low as getting busted for breaking into parking meters, you know.
You're saying it's a tragedy because it's not a tragedy.
That's kind of... Look, what I'm really saying, Larry, is I need a favor. You know, O.J. Simpson needs a place to go on television and defend his good name.
So you're saying you didn't pirate the signals?
Larry, you don't think if I wanted DirecTV for free, I couldn't call up Don Holmeyer or some of my other golfing buddies and find a connection in 5 minutes that could get that done before you could say, "Hey, how you doing?"
No, I suppose so.
Yeah.
How is Don?
I don't know. He stopped taking my calls.
Yeah.
But look, Larry, I took a pledge on the steps of that courthouse. You know, I know my lawyer, Yael Galanter.
Oh, please tell Yael I send my best.
I will, Larry. Yeah. He didn't want me to do this, but, you know, I stood up there in front of that courthouse and I pledged to use all of my resources to find a real pirate of that DirecTV service.
Nah, that's great, Juice. Listen.
Coming on your show and talking about my case and my innocence and everything, wouldn't just be about me.
Yeah.
How many people are wrongly accused of satellite piracy every year in this country, Larry?
No, I don't, OJ. I didn't read the prepared material before the call.
I didn't send you any.
Yeah, well, if I read it, I would have known you didn't send any, but...
Not a whole show, Larry.
Yeah,
I'm no Tammy Faye Mesner, I know that, but, a couple of segments to talk about the unfairness and everything, and the defense fund.
Yeah.
I mean, O.J. Simpson still got some ratings power, Larry, just judging by the number of requests I still get every day for autographed footballs, and let me put it this way, Larry, we do not underprice them, you know what I'm saying?
Juice, I appreciate everything you're saying, believe me, but, it's not like the old days anymore.
No.
Even Tammy Faye with a relapse can't do the ratings that this missing girl in Aruba does. I'm serious. If we don't do the Natalie Holloway shows, we might as well just simulcast Hannity and whoever on IR. We'll do a better number.
Larry, maybe not even two segments.
Yeah.
Maybe just one.
Yeah.
You know what they say in show business. Leave them wanting more. I wouldn't even have to be in the studio. We could do it just like this, except, you'd be on a landline, of course. But
OJ, what I'm telling you is I can't even put my own family on this show except for holidays. It's a new era. I mean, if I was still writing a column, it'd be a no-brainer. .. Has there ever been a better summertime fruit than a peach? .. O.J. Simpson tells me he won't rest until the real satellite pirate is found. .. You look in the dictionary under swinging, you see a picture of Paul Anka's new CD. Like that. But it ain't like the old days anymore, my friend.
Larry, don't squeeze the juice, man. Don't do it. Don't think you're the first person I called for help. I called F. Lee the minute this thing came down, but he's in jail or something. And it was going to be like a 2-month wait before he could take my call. Johnny C. is passed.
Yeah.
Quitter won't give me the time of day ever since she had her face done. And Star Jones, man, she's gone more uptown than O.J. ever did. So
Look, Juice, I'd love to see you sometime. I don't get down to Miami that much anymore, and I know you don't get to L.A., but.
Larry, I swear, I can't walk down the street without people coming up to me and saying, OJ, you got to fight that conviction. You got framed, man.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have happened if you still had Barry Shaq, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, the people are with me, but...
Juice, I got to do weekend wraparounds for a big dead people show. Why don't you try Paula? She knows she's never going to catch O'Reilly. They'll try things over there.
Okay, Larry. I get you. If I want some help in the search for the real pirates, I'm going to have to get it on my own. worse things have happened.
Sure. And they will again.
You got that right.
Yeah.
Okay, Larry. Love to the family.
Thanks. Love to everybody in Miami.
Mm-hmm. Take care.
Los Angeles Dog Trainer Corrections.
These are the fine corrections from the Los Angeles Dog Trainer this week. The ones that count, because that was the key feedback I got from you folks. Just give us the Dog Trainer corrections that really matter. A July 13th article in Section A about a group of white preachers gathering to issue an apology for lynching 89 years ago in South Carolina. Describe the father of Minister Johnson Dorn as a U.S. Senator. William Jennings Bryan Dorn was a U.S. Representative. There are only two houses. They are in the same building. It's really easy. An article and headline in Tuesday, Section A, about New York Governor George Pataki's plan to veto legislation that would allow women to buy the morning after pill without a prescription. Describe the pill as RU486, which, in fact, is a different medication. A capsule review of the movie Sky High in Thursday's Weekend section referred to actor Kurt Russell as Kirk Russell. Also, the Sky High listing in the Sunday section contained a capsule review for another movie, Must Love Dogs. A news brief in Friday's Section A about the sale of heavy water to Israel said heavy water was also known as deuterium. Heavy water is a compound of deuterium, which is an isotope of hydrogen. An article about CNN suspension of contributor Robert Novak said he'd been associated with the cable network for 15 years. In fact, he's been with CNN for 25 years. That's just a number, see? That I don't even regard as a real correction, because that's just a number, man. And a July 30th editorial said 70% of Los Angeles water is provided by the Owens Valley Aqueduct. The aqueduct supplies just under 44% of the city's water for the last 15 years. But that's just a number, too. See? That's really... You guys are right. These are just numbers. Los Angeles dog trainer corrections are just numbers now.
If I don't love you, baby, grits ain't grocery, eggs ain't poultry, and Mona Lisa was a man. I'd lie it on my bed and stay with my woman till I die. With a toothpick in my hand, I'd dig a 10-foot ditch and run off through the jungle fighting lions with the switch. Because you know I love you, baby. And Mona Lisa was a man. Oh, baby. Listen. All around the world, I've got blisters on my feet. I'm trying to find my baby and bring her home with me. You better run into me, baby, and be convinced. If you don't run into me right now, woman, you ain't got no sense. Because you know I love you, baby. And Mona Lisa was a man.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is More Than You Know. More Than You Know, the weekly public radio series that focuses on events and personalities outside your ken. I'm Jacob Kitzel. Radio is about sound. Today, mainly the sound of music and the sound of voices. Here in public radio, there are many voices you think you know, and one that you probably don't realize that you do. CPR's special correspondent, Aviva Schlorman, introduces you to Henry Pensacola.
We're in a small recording studio deep inside the bowels of public radio. Outside, in the hallways and offices, there's hustle and bustle. News is being covered, opinions are being shared, decisions are being postponed. But here inside studio at 4J, one man stands in the beam of light thrown by a track lighting canister. He squints just a bit at the words on the paper that sits on the music stand. And then, as he does every day, he begins to weave his spell.
Support for this program comes from WayneKilgoreWillis.com. Information solutions
that take the obvious a step beyond. Online at www.wkw.com.org. Jastro, a world of fingertips at your fingertips. www.jastro.com. The Republic of Liechtenstein, for coverage of Teutonic culture. Liechtenstein, we're in Europe too. And from the Public Broadcasting Foundation, making tax exemptions work twice as hard. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
That's great, Henry. That's your take.
Is it okay?
Yes, Henry. That's your take. There's a keeper.
Good. Onward.
Henry Pensacola has been in public radio for almost a decade. This Sephardic Jew with the shock of black hair and the shy smile spends his days inside Studio 4J, reading the funding credits at the beginning and end and increasingly in the middle of all our programs. Henry Pensacola is the most recognizable voice on our air, and yet you've never met him till now.
For the first couple of years here, I did a little bit of everything. I covered the environment beat. I hosted the Buffalo Philharmonic concerts. I was Scrooge when the news staff did their production of A Christmas Carol. But ultimately, as we all do, I began to specialize.
Henry, what was it about funding credits that drew you to specialize in them?
Well, they didn't seem to be read with any consistency, I guess. Anybody who had a spare moment would be brought in here to go through a bunch of them. Some people treated it as a sort of a chore. I convinced management that in the same way that every program's identity is wrapped up in a voice or two, our funding credits needed that same kind of identity. And I don't suppose it hurt that I tend to pronounce things pretty carefully.
Oh, the funders like that.
I suppose they do.
Henry, you make all the funding credits sound so easy, but I'm sure there have been some difficult challenges. Does any one stand out as particularly troublesome?
Well, there was one that was very difficult to keep a straight face during.
What was that?
The corporation had a grant from the American Bison Council. I think their slogan was, "Introducing a new generation to the other red meat."
And
something about it just broke me up. It took me about 24 takes to get it right.
Well, there's a famous tape of you that circulates inside the building here, isn't there?
Oh, you've heard it. Yes, we had a grant from the Marjorie Shuggin Foundation. It gives money for the coverage of America's intellectual life, and their catchphrase was, "Shuggin, fit for brains." I don't know where my brain was that day, but some letters got switched around and...
And the highlight of every public radio Christmas party was born.
I guess it was.
Every day, the funding department sends Henry a printout of the day's financial supporters. Every day, he wrestles with nuances of tone and pronunciation.
A lot of them are our regulars, you know, your agribusiness giants, your foreign countries, rich families have been with us all along. But every day there's some new internet investment service with the unpronounceable names of four partners or a medical foundation supporting coverage of a disease that you've never heard of because, to be fair, there hasn't been coverage. let me put it this way. Every day there's some reason why we don't get to lunch before 1:30.
But there are times, aren't there, where you get to exercise a little more creativity?
Well, as with almost everything else,
There are slow seasons for public radio fundraising. I don't pretend to know the reasons. Budgetary constraints, end of fiscal years, that sort of thing.
Of course.
Anyway, when those times roll around, we used to just slow down the reading. Say, we just had one funder. In a slot where we normally would have three, and if there was nobody to credit, we just had this little piece of music we played. Well, that became known around the stations as the Poorhouse Suite.
Oh.
And I got memos that my slow reading was driving people a little nuts.
How slow was it?
Oh, let's see. Support for this program comes from the TV Guide Foundation, helping to build awareness of jazz. About like that.
No, that must be hard to do.
Well, it's very hard to keep your concentration. Your mind tends to wander off during the pauses. So I began making up funders, you know, foundations and corporations that sound just like the real ones.
Mm-hmm.
So now, instead of us advertising that it's a slow time, we sound as if we're sold out year-round.
Henry, do you get fan mail?
I've gotten marriage proposals, one from a woman who wrote that hearing my voice always made her think of good things like disease prevention, the environment, and the arts. And she liked that.
Okay, Henry, just do the ending one more time for us.
Okay. Rolling?
Just a minute.
Mm.
Okay, yes, we're rolling now.
This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
Yes, that's a good one, Henry. See you tomorrow.
All right, bye-bye.
When Henry Pensacola leaves Studio 4J, he and his engineer are the only persons who know what credits have been recorded in what sequence for airing on what program. It's a security precaution based on necessity.
A few years ago, management here learned that people at the stations around the country, you know, the announcers and the engineers waiting to do the local break.
Mm-hmm.
They were running gambling pools on what the credits would be.
Gambling pools?
Yes, you know, at the end of this half hour, it'll be such and such a foundation or such and such a movie for smart people.
Mm-hmm.
These folks were betting large sums of money, well, large for public radio, and there was some concern that people who got inside information in advance as to what credits were going to actually run could take advantage of the situation.
Oh my goodness.
So, like everything else in this modern world, we now have airtight security. Just for having heard that session of Eva, we now have to kill you and your crew.
Henry Pensacola, giving credits where credits are due. Sworn to secrecy in Washington, I'm Aviva Schlorman.
Baseball's recent All-Star game marked a bittersweet time for commentator Bixby Knowles.
I shoved my gloved arm halfway up a hepatitic calf this week. I came face to face with myself. Mortality stared at me like a tourist through that animal's eyes, and I knew summer was half over. All-star games mean that here in Wyoming. They signal it's time to start to prepare for fall. There are sheep to inoculate against pink ear, swine that need their teeth cleaned. When the all-star teams are announced, while other fans think of green outfields, I think of a goat that must be fitted with a truss before the first snow. Plenty of time for joy next summer. This one's almost over.
Bixby Knowles is a large animal poet and free verse veterinarian who lives in Cody, Wyoming. He comes to us from member station KIOU. And for this week, that's More Than You Know. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, on this week's show, a couple of items, again, from really just almost outside the bubble that might want to get in. A federal judge this week said he may order the Bush administration to bring two cleared but stranded Guantanamo Bay detainees. That's a nice status to be in, cleared but stranded. To his courtroom in the nation's capital, an extraordinary proposal that could enable the men to leave home at the military prison in Cuba. This is from the Boston Globe. The judge is alternatively considering an order that would force the government to move them into a special facility for migrants at that base. He won't decide for several weeks, but he could become the first federal judge to order the military to discharge a detainee from the prison. Unprecedented at Guantanamo. These judges are out of control, ladies and gentlemen. The detainees are different from the other 500 at Guantanamo. A military tribunal has found the men were in the wrong place at the wrong time and ordered them released, but the men are staying at the prison because the United States cannot send them back to China, which has a history of persecuting Muslims. That's where they came from, apparently, and no other country will take them. They are ethnic Uyghurs, U-I-G-H-U-R-S, Muslims from China. They left home before 9/11, fleeing persecution in China. Pakistani police subsequently arrested them and turned them over to the U.S. military as al-Qaeda suspects, apparently in exchange for $5,000 bounties. The U.S. transferred the men to Guantanamo. Ladies and gentlemen, don't you know? And independent schools in Australia, including seven Islamic colleges in the state of Victoria, will be required to teach a curriculum consistent with Australian democratic values under a new law. The Australian government has warned it will crack down on non-government schools where there is inappropriate teaching or antisocial behavior. All schools in Victoria, says the education minister, must conform with all Australian laws regarding equal opportunity and racial vilification. It seems a good thing when you apply it to Islamic schools. Now let's see what happens when they try to apply it to Christian schools. This really outside the bubble. Captain John Carr, a military prosecutor for the United States, told his superiors over a year ago, the Pentagon is poised to prosecute fairly low-level accused, meaning at Guantanamo, in a process that appears to be rigged, his words. His colleague Major Robert Preston said, quote, surely they don't expect that this fairly half-assed effort is all that we've been able to put together after all this time, unquote. Emails released this week, ladies and gentlemen. Of course you heard about it. That's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet, 7.4 and 5 megahertz. Available on channel 108 on Sirius Satellite Radio and as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow and available whenever you want it at two different locations on your computer, live and archived around the world at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com and available as a podcast. Come on, subscribe. Be part of the gang at kcrw.com and it would be just like not having rigged the prosecution of the detainees. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. You know, if dolphins are so damn smart, they'll invent a robot submersible to get themselves untangled from those fishing nets, don't you think? Hey, here's good news. The government of the city of Santa Monica is considering a new policy regarding the homeless called Housing First. Yes, it's new. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.